I don't know how. Somebody looked that up.
That's funny.
But, yeah. And that was like, you know, you made it. And you kind of carried him around with honor for a while, and then they did away with it. But, yeah, I mean, it would be the wildest thing until you believe it, that you're literally in shorts during the day and you're freezing at night. And that was the home field advantage that you found it. Yeah, there it is. Croydie Candlestick. And that the 49ers and the Giants had for years going to that place.
That is funny. That is funny. I love it. I've seen that. I mean, over the years. I mean, that people, you know, people that were bundled up at the conclusion. Look at that. An award pin. That's great. How funny. I love it. Well, Hammer, we'll deal with it. It's certainly not the first time we're sitting in the lobby in the just adjacent to the paddock here at Oak Lawn. And, of course, no racing until Friday. The Rebel on Saturday, as well as the Honeybee. So the three-year-olds in focus here. We've got lots of three-year-old results to discuss, including what went on in New Orleans. We've got a ton of industry news and, of course, the news that dominated the last 36 hours involving the predictable and expected disqualification of Medina Spirit from his Derby win, and the elevating of Mandaloon, and you know, everybody's talked about Mandaloon, but it basically also means that you've got the entire, the entire field gets elevated, a spot, obviously. And I haven't seen that widely discussed. But, Hammer, this whole thing was so unnecessary, but yet it has to be dealt with and addressed and play out. It really is shaping up as not any different than the Dancer's Image scenario, where there'll be now, the things playing out in the court with Craig Robertson and Clark Brewster, taking the next steps. More significantly, the 90-day suspension for Bob Baffert is notable, and the KHRC specifically noting the four positives over the previous calendar period, and that warranted, normally it's a betamethasone would be fairly routine fine and suspension, but 90 days significant, and there'll be the appeals, and there's just so much about this that is just going to continue to be arduous, and until there's a resolution, a complete resolution,
and it'll probably be years as well.
Yeah,
and but he had to start somewhere. It just took a lot. It took a while to get to that start, the official start. And we should offer congratulations, of course, to everybody, the owners, the Floron. I talked to Doug Bradar, congratulated him. He says, "Well, not yet," but they painted. I saw where they put the sign up at Churchill Downs in the paddock area, and it's a shame, and I don't want to get into this, but we didn't get paid, as we liked a little bit, but that's all the way it goes. I mean, we lost the race, and I'm not saying we should. I'm just saying it's God, it would have been great. He lost the race. That's over for that. I'm not getting into it, but anyway, good morning, as we have a nice, pretty face walking by us here this morning. As you said, Steve, right here in the paddock here, it's kind of a cool spot. We'll catch some people walking by.
The first person we saw today was Norm Cassie, actually. And he said, "What are you doing here? You should have stayed in New Orleans." Which was kind of made me kind of amusing. The other story, in addition, of course, to discussing Medina Spirit, and I'm sure that if we're able to connect with Dick and Sid, we'll get some thoughts as well. But the other story involving Churchill from yesterday, the early morning news that CDI was acquiring Colonial Downs and its assets, which actually there's a few assets that I wasn't even aware that they were involved in, including that Del Lago casino that you know, popped up like a genie in Waterloo, New York, above the thruway, came out of absolutely nowhere, and it was a kind of a very strange scenario to the consternation of everybody at Finger Lakes. Del Lago, part of the holdings that are involved in this. $2 billion acquisition, and you know, immediately, I haven't had a chance yet to talk to Debbie Easter and you know, the Virginia racing interests, but you know, people right away, you know, assuming that the, you know, the worst about Colonial Downs, it doesn't. I wouldn't imagine there's cause for concern regarding the property, the racing, and everything that's gone into this, considering it was, you know, instrumental in changing the gaming landscape in Virginia, and everything is tied, you know, to Colonial, and it's been such a success in terms of, you know, the Virginia certification program and mayors coming to Virginia and dropping and training. I won't comment until we've got you know, some of the people involved that can, you know, provide their insight.
Well, you know, Joe Byrne, who's taken over the hands-on operation, is just doing a wonderful job of bringing that and her team, Allison DeLuca as well.
That's right.
Bringing that track back to life. They're on the map. I think they. I just read the top. I didn't read below the headlines on the sale, but they applied for and got 6 extra days, right? Which is probably 2 weeks, so they'll run a little bit longer. And you know, I think it's because of the success that they've shown and the interest that the bettors have shown in the big fields that they run there, that maybe Churchill showed some interest to race there.
Well, it certainly you know, it certainly was a lot to pay to reacquire Jill Byrne to get her back in the Churchill fold.
Yeah, you know what? She does a great job. She's so positive about the game, and you know, I'm sure you'll have her on soon, and she can say what she can at this point. But no, it's just it was away for a while. It was gone. It was out of all of our minds, and all of a sudden, Colonial's back, and it's playable, and so it's really cool. You know, we haven't spoken on the radio.
2 weeks, yeah.
In 2 weeks, which is really 3, and the whole thing. And I go back on my notes from, you know, I had a bunch of stuff. We've missed Super Bowls, Eclipse Awards, right? We've been gone. It's pretty wild. I was traveling 1 week, and the other week you're out, but it's pretty crazy.
Right. You were making your way. That's right. I forgot you were on the road.
I've been home and back and all kinds of stuff. I've got a lot of notes here. So Super Bowl seemed like it was like 3 months ago, doesn't it?
Now that you say that, that's the day I traveled to New Orleans, and so yeah, a little bit. It does. It does feel like it was ages ago. And the eclipse. I'm sure when we talk to Jay Pribman on Friday, you know, we'll get a couple of quick thoughts, you know, from Jay regarding the eclipse. Stuff and we've also got to catch up, obviously, on the 2 weeks worth of stakes action, and most notably, a couple of quick. Let's actually do this for a minute regarding the weekend in New Orleans, because there were, you know, in addition to the race, whether you were focused on the Risen Star or anything else, it was a great day of racing, and it was. You know, great. I would say about as good an atmosphere as you can get. There's been some headaches in regards to the facility in terms of having, you know, full service. They're only opening the dining rooms on the 6 or 5 big Saturday cards.
Really?
Yeah, staffing issues and so forth. So I think it kept down the attendance a little bit. But there were probably 5,000 easily, and it made for a very comfortable day at fairgrounds and a fun day. I had about as nice a time during the week. I was there. What was I there? 7 days essentially. Well, five. Yeah, 6 days. And big thanks to to everybody, Joe Christofek and Kevin Kilroy and the team at Fairgrounds on that front, and then the time we had with Pat McGoey and his brother and Frank. I mean, Frank basically hosted me, and Grant Forster. I got there for Monday, and Joe Christofek said, after the racing today, this was a week ago Monday, Grant Forster's having a crawfish boil. And he said, everybody's welcome. So,
I knew food had to come into play.
Oh, food, forget it.
New Orleans.
Forget it.
New Orleans.
It was ridiculous. But this was a lot of fun. I'd never been for a crawfish, never seen the whole process and the big boil tank and everything that goes into it, and then the pouring of the little mud bugs on the table and everybody standing around. It was so much fun, and got to meet so many people, and that was terrific. And Grant, Forster has that famous party at the house across from Churchill, and for years it was big Derby party, then it became an Oaks Derby party. Now it essentially is Derby week party. You get a wristband, and everybody, it's like a 96-hour bacchanalia at Grant's place. A famous host, and he also, the craziest story of the week. He said, we're taking Merrill Shearer out on Wednesday. Would you want to come? So I said, absolutely, I want to see Merrill. And Merrill's doing very well. For those that that haven't heard updates, Merrill's, he balance is a little off. But other than that, he's Merrill at the Merrill you know and love. So we went across to Metairie and met at this Bistro Orleans in Metairie. And the Calhouns and Grant and his man Rich and Merrill Shearer Jr. and Gary Shearer, me and Merrill. Everybody's drinking probably three or four each. I don't partake, but we have nice dinner.
Contact high?
Not really. we're starting to wrap up, and I turned to Brett at one point. I said, you smelled smoke? He said, yeah. So we didn't think anything of it. A couple of minutes later, waitress comes in. You got to go. There's a fire. in behind the restaurant and adjacent to this feed and tack store, there's like a shed that caught on fire. And the smoke is pouring into the restaurant. It's right up against the back entrance of the restaurant. So they're chasing it. You got to go. And so everybody gets up. They start to go out into the parking lot in front. And there's people, the restaurant, we were in the bar side. The restaurant was busy. And people literally are taking their plates and forks, and they're walking out of the restaurant with their food. And it was a panic, absolute. So thanks to Grant for taking us out and showing us a good time. It was just crazy.
Sounds like no. And Metairie, is that where you got the king cakes?
I as a matter of fact, right close by to that, Randazzo. When I was heading out on Sunday to come here, I thought to myself, let me pick up a couple of king cakes, one for me and Rick, and one for the racing office. How'd that go yesterday?
Well, I brought, donuts come and go in a racing office. It's normal.
Sure.
Normal fare. And so you gave me the king cake. King cake's a king cake, right? To me, whatever. It's wrapped up. So I put it on the front counter. Someone immediately notices it. Oh, a king cake. Okay. So the first guy that comes in, cuts it open, takes a little 2-inch slice, walks down the hall, turns around and comes back and goes, where'd you get that? And I said, that's the real deal. He goes, you're darn right it is. And then once the seal was broken, And that thing went in 15 minutes. And it was, oh, my gosh, this is the... Yeah, and I said, just came up from New Orleans. It's not from, you know, Jimmy's Bakery down the hall. So wherever it came from, whatever you did, it was recognized as the real thing. So it was pretty funny.
The whole king cake, and, of course, Tuesday, week from today is... Today's Tuesday or Wednesday?
Today's Wednesday.
Jesus, I'm gone. Week from yesterday is Fat Tuesday, and the mania that is coming to a fever pitch. Most often when we're in New Orleans, the Risen Star is usually after, typically has been after Mardi Gras. And so I will get the town in the aftermath. This was the first time I've seen the parades. I stayed, and thanks to Ben Bacek, for letting me use he's got the apartment in the Puntalba on Jackson Square, used that for most of the week, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I moved over to the Garden District, to the Indigo, where Tina and I had stayed a few years ago. Well, St. Charles is the site of all the uptown parades, and they come from mid-city, and they go to the edge of the quarter. Well, I had never seen them, and so I was able to witness about four of them Friday night. Friday night was, it got very cold there Friday night, and I watched about a parade. There were three parades. I watched one and a half. Then on Saturday, there were four more, but I was at the racetrack. And then on Sunday, I was able to watch two of them, and... It is a scene and a half. I mean, I've seen images, I've seen video. It was really a lot of fun. At the same time, it's a gigantic, the mayhem involved in trying to get around town and everything else, because the streetcar service gets suspended, and it's a whole thing. So when you talk about the king cakes, though, Randazzo's, it is one of the, at this point, it's sort of a, I don't want to call it a factory level, but it's, you know, it's been around decades and is very well received. That's what I brought. But there's Gambino's, there's Kaluta, there's, you know, all the best known options. And there's supposed to be a Vietnamese bakery restaurant that is making what is now considered the elite, the king cake, the mother of all king cakes.
Can I ask you one question?
Yeah.
Why'd you leave?
Well, I wanted to come here. We got a big week here. In fact, we've got basically 10 days here because in addition to meeting up to Rebel on Saturday, we're looking forward to the HBBA convention next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Wednesday, Thursday, Thursday, Wednesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Thursday, Wednesday, 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 with you and with Danny Caldwell and Ron Moquette, which you're looking forward to, and talk about some industry issues, obviously, when HBPA gets together. So looking forward to that, and more about that next week.
But that was the holdover from last year.
Right.
They were
going to
have the
here last year.
Here, and actually, with COVID and, you know, had some delays in some of the furniture getting over here for the upper floors of the hotel. So you know what? Everything's full steam ahead with you were here in December, which is
yes, for
like
the opening
three
weekend.
Years ago. I mean 3 years ago. Three months ago. Seems like 3 years ago. And you got the tour. We got the tour of the hotel rooms and boy, this place is in full swing. Just not only the hotel and the spa in the casino, but the event center. There's a schedule up. I have to look at it and see what it is. But they've had some bands here. They've got some comedians coming in.
Nice.
They've had some, I think, a wedding here. So the place is going to be packed, and that's where we're going to have the convention. And here comes Moquette right now, carrying a couple bags of something. He's been on an absolute roll, so maybe he's bringing donuts for the help here.
There he is. There he is. Look at him. Look at that smile. Wait, what are you up to? What do you got going? You're amazing. Say hello. Say hello to the your adoring public. Mr. Oaklawn, everybody. Ron Moquette.
That's not me. Mr. Oaklawn was Bob Holtus.
Yes, he was. That's fair.
I'm
fair.
The... the worn out, weakened down version.
the Arkahomian, as we call you.
That's it.
The man born on the border between Arkansas and Oklahoma.
Yeah. I see you come down and brought the weather with you. Thanks for that.
Don't blame me. I was in New Orleans, so I can't be.
There's always
got to
be equal. You go down there and you get the great, you know, tropical weather. It's got to equal out. So it's your fault.
This is nuts.
I second that. It was fine.
It's funny to walk around the corner and see you guys standing here. If you're everything but a parka.
Hey.
There's an electric blanket. There's all kinds of.
I got my beads on, though.
There you go.
Brett Calhoun's wife, and I'm going to forget her name. No?
Miss Calhoun.
Mrs. Calhoun. Happens to be from Watertown, New York, which kind of surprised me. They met at Keeneland. But she, for Christmas, apparently got a heated vest, a riding vest, for exercise riding in weather like this. And she says it's unbelievable.
We have a girl that records the works here on the front side that works for Cody Photography that wears a battery-operated...
That's what this is.
...jacket every morning. Yeah, she's Keely. She wears a battery-operated jacket. It's got a little light on it and everything, and I didn't know this animal existed.
No.
I thought we were behind on technology till I saw that, and I'm thinking we're catching up pretty good.
Yeah, we just saw her out front. I went out for a walk. She's the only one standing out there. Now
she's frozen.
She can't move.
She's okay. Frozen.
That may be, too. We were telling everybody. It was 70, right?
Yeah. It's fun. But, you know, it's still Oaklawn. It's still, you know, you get spoke to when you go through the casino to get coffee, asking when you're going to have a horse in, and can we bet, and, you know, that kind of stuff warms your soul, so I'm happy about that.
And you know what? If you get cold, all you got to do is come here. There were so many bodies here over the weekend. It was packed.
It was huge.
All 4 days.
It was huge. And, you know, that's one of the things that we're... As people that do this for a living, we draw energy off certain things. There are certain reasons I want to go to certain places. Obviously the Derby for Churchill Downs. I love Keeneland for the excitement, and that's a great spot. But Saratoga and Oaklawn is where I get my fan fix. That's where they love horses as much as I do. And if you can't have fun with that, you just can't have fun.
Well, how are you looking for this weekend?
Well, we're hoping to be live. You know, I always get on to the racing secretary. He can't seem to do anything but put me in a 12-horse field. And we'll feel like we've got a great shot, and I look through there, and there's like three or four horses that all thinking the same thing I do.
Well, that is funny, because I've never seen a place like this, in-ring-wise. And it is... I think a lot of it is, and I hadn't seen this since New Jersey and Monmouth. People want to be, they want to be part of the program. They want to be part of the show here. You know, we get in on a Saturday, yeah, put me in. And, you know, it kind of feeds off itself, because they like to be here and see people in the stands and be part of it.
Yeah, it's you got to run in big fields, and you got to run against no matter what. You've got Asmussen Cox, and you know, we've got the young and upcomers with Bauer and Ortiz and all these guys.
John Ortiz, very quietly, is shouldering his way into, you know, that B plus tier with stake horses and steady trickle upward.
In my opinion, Ortiz came here and focused a lot on doing well at Hot Springs. And when he did, he got a lot of Arkansas native owners. And that helped him. And you know, if you want to do well, you want to do well where the purses are big, and they're big here. And now he's got a lot of these Arkansas-based owners with the Gasways and with John Ed Anthony. And, you know, that's helping his stature here in a big way. And we like to see it. I want to see different people winning races. I'd like, selfishly, for me to win them all, but at the same time, I like it whenever you look up and somebody's winning a nice allowance race that isn't one of the top three that win all the allowance races. And I think it's good for the sport. You know, parity is good. I think that whenever you have some people that somebody are asking, hey, who's this guy? Where'd he come from? That's good for our game, and that's you know, shows that somebody else can win a race.
You know, you mentioned something there when you said they'd point for a meet. Now, so obviously we don't run year-round here. So when you leave here and before you come here, you've been somewhere else. And so you can't train and be 100% 365 days a year. You got to give your horses a little break. You take a break. So when you say you point for a meet, Tell them what that exactly means. It's not you're not trying somewhere else, but you'd gather your stock, and maybe wait an extra week and not run the last week at one meet to come here type of thing.
Well, I mean, there's several different ways of doing it. I see people like Robertino Diodoro. He might run well in other spots, but you can tell he gears up for Hot Springs every year. That's where he runs the most of his horses. That's where he does the best. And then you've got other people that they may not travel. They may just come to Hot Springs and kick their horses out. Well, right. You know, I'm a kind of a mid-size outfit that I need to show wherever I'm at that I'm earning my keep.
Sure.
When I go to Churchill Downs, Ben Huffman doesn't want to hear how good I did at Oaklawn. He wants to know for a fact that when I come there, I'm ready and I pointed to that meet. And I do. But with the Arkansas bred program and that, I can run quite a few horses here and do well here. And then also, you know, point to try to win. Some races are easier to win in Kentucky than they are here. I mean, some races are easier to win in Saratoga than they are here. That's not saying that, you know, it's always the case, but you gotta try to point to where you think your horses are going to do the best. And Asmussen's took out $5 million a year from this place the last 2 years, and I don't know where he does that out, you know, anywhere else. He's you know, formidable here.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Diodoro, and I talk about him at the beginning of the meet many times. The condition book comes out 4 or 5 months in advance, and because we run on dirt here, Pat Pope, the racing, has to write some very creative races to get the number of races in the book per day they'd have. So what Robertino will do is he'll go out and claim horses or hold back horses just to point for that single race, that third race on the third Friday.
And knowing he's probably going to lose the horse.
Exactly. But he always starts out by pointing for the race. He's getting horses specifically for book one at Oaklawn.
And you know, that's one of the things that make this race meet tough for everyone when you come in, is like, you can do well at other spots, but you got to realize you've got Robertino Diodoro, Carl Broberg, you've got these guys that Danny Caldwell with Villafranco. These guys win races to the point that they're in the top three or four trainers every year with races won. And then, oh, by the way, we've got Hall of Famers. We've got Steve Asmussen, Brad Cox with these powerful stables. You got to fit in where get in where you fit in and just try to, you know, win. But luckily, the purses are good enough to where even if you're second or third or lead the leagues in third, like I do this meet, then you're still paying your wages for your owners, you know.
Yeah, so, but like you said, if you're going to point for a meet, you might as well point to the one with a lot of zeros after it.
And, yeah.
You know, the allowance races that are made here, day in and day out, and I'm just talking about the one other than two other than. We have these, you know, nominators of 40,000 twice since, May type of thing. I mean, we see the race we were in the other day with Concert Tour, and Necker Island ended up winning it. And you could put a name on there.
Yeah, it should have been a graded stake. Yeah. The day before when we won with Trident Hit.
I love that horse.
Yeah, we got beat by Warrior's Charge, his last out. Yeah. In an allowance race, you look up and you go, okay, well, he's out of the way. Now we can come back and maybe through attrition, it's our turn to win. Well, the way the race was written, Warrior's Charge, Nick's Go, you know, Life is Good, they're all eligible.
Yeah.
So it's a stake race for the gamblers, but it doesn't have a name on it.
Right, and I think, wasn't Warrior's Charge in there?
Yeah, he was back in. He just won the last allowance race, and here it is again in another allowance.
They decided to don't take a breather and run in the Essex next.
We'll
open it up.
He's a nice horse, and he loves this surface.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're that's the kind of horses we're used to looking at when we come here. I've I've ran into the best of the best. I ran against Mitoli in a maiden special weight. I watched Gamine in AA other than. I ran a sloppy racetrack with a light field that everybody was questioning the quality of in the Rebel 1 year, and this horse tore his shoe off coming out of the gates and ended up winning it anyways. His name was American Pharaoh. I mean, that's the problem with thinking you're coming here loaded. You can very well walk into the next, you know, haymaker.
No, it's true. You look at some of the allowance races, and I know you were going to bring it up, the Brissette horse that won the other day.
We the People.
We the
which
People.
That was the talk of the pack site for a month.
Yep. And
right?
Still goes off.
Paid $9.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everybody knew that was the horse. And, you know, that's, you hear the gamblers speak that everybody knew. Well, we all saw that horse could run in the morning. But when you saw that field of horses that was running against them, it was Murderer's Row.
It was.
He wasn't the best looking horse in there. He was just one of the best looking.
And a first time starter going along. And so Brad was here that day. Okay, and I went up, and I saw him, hadn't seen him, and I congratulated him on the
This is funny.
And I said, stakes, got a couple stakes. He goes, stakes, I'm here to watch that good thing in the last. That's what he said. He goes, I want to watch this horse everyone is talking about in the last race, the maiden.
Blasey will text me, especially when maidens perform, and ask me what buyer did so-and-so get. And he texted. It's the first time he's ever texted. Well, not the first time, but one of the first times he's texted about a different horse. It said, "What that horse in Brissette's gap that we ran against."
He has to do it against winners, right? But if you told me today, you get to walk to any stall on the backside and grab a 3-year-old,
wow,
make your career with it,
wow.
Today, that's the one I would go snatch up. He was that impressive. Now, again, was it a one-hit wonder, or is he gonna put it all together and make a career? But judging by what I saw and whenever he walked out of the stall right beside me in the saddling paddock, I was like, look at this. he's a very good-looking, big-stepping, nice shoulder, nice hind end, well-balanced, good-looking horse.
Right. And we'll see where he ends up. We're sitting here at, coming up to March, and I don't know if they get the fever. It's going to take the allowance route and just kind of see if we got something. But maybe he might show up somewhere else.
If people have PPs like horses, I would probably say that ownership group would like to win a other than here and then be in the bluegrass.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Now, that's
back to a grade one.
Yeah, that's me handicapping owners. Then that's what I would say. Guessing.
It makes good sense, actually.
It was a little quick back because we had one for Saturday.
Yeah.
But it'll be two weeks to get that done.
Yeah, that's I think, these... Rudy does a good job with his horses,
right.
And I like to watch him train. I think he does it the right way, so I root for him.
This first year with a string here.
Yeah.
And I tell you, this is not a place you just waltz into. I mean, not that he was planning on it, but, I mean, you really have to kind of sit back and check it out.
Running.
He's kind of got his feet wet a little bit, and now I think he's... After that big win, I think he's like, okay, I'm here.
Yeah, it's you can't come in here thinking you're just going to swing when you want to. I think it's kind of like Saratoga in that I've been up to Saratoga many times, thought, well, I may not win a stake, but I'll win that A other than, and then I look in there and I'm running in a other than against the horse that's going to be the favorite stake. It's next out. So that's just how it goes, kind of.
Give us a couple of quick thoughts. I do see you got a firster on Saturday, Devious for Harlow Stables and Sequel Bloodstock. This was a Town and Country bred that went through the ring at Timonium. $130,000 for an Into Mischief out of a Street Cry mare. There may be some, I don't know if there's some turf in this future or not. What's your thought? Devious in the first Saturday. Philly.
I think that she's definitely got... can go the other direction on turf. I think she's probably going to be better when we stretch her out. The thing that we got to do is being on the inside here is no good deal. you got some really nice horses with some proven form on the outside. So you're going to have to break well and bring your A game to be competitive in this group. There's some high-dollar horses that are well-meant, just like ours.
Well, it's, you know, interestingly, Phil Bauer has got one for Mr. Rigney, the $500,000 Little Mambo. This is also an Into Mischief, but out of the Dynaformer mare, Sam I Am, and she was a turf mare.
Turn the page. There's a couple more good ones.
I haven't even gotten back in the backside. Oh, here's that Brad Cox fellow with Fire Wolves, who probably ran into a buzzsaw in the debut in December. How about Asmussen? Wow, there's another stake mare, Belle of Perrintown, the DeHare mare, the Gunrunner. This is Stone Street's homebred, Airy Oakley, who took a step forward last time. Mac Robertson, always tough. He's got a Warrior's Reward, who might break running. And there's Joe Sharp with a 76 Byring Hardy Constitution. The Constitutions with some added experience and maturity are stepping forward.
Yeah, I've noticed recently that the Constitutions are picking up again, and they're pretty hot, like we just spoke of, We the People, and obviously a couple of the horses that's on the trail. So, you know, that race is a very nice race. We're not going in there thinking that we're going to blow them away, but we're wanting to show that we have some ability and see where we shake out.
That mare, Amen Sister, was kind of modest herself, but she was a sibling of a stake horse and a decent family. And in addition to Devious, you do have a couple of Archie-bred fillies as well on Friday. And I imagine that Sully, the Dominus four-year-old, she probably goes favored, maybe, or close to it.
Yeah, she's a big, long stride, late closing. If you get a chance to watch that replay of that
race. Oh, my God, she came from 20 lengths back to get beat a neck.
Yeah, but that running style, you know, only Zenyatta did that here. You know, you don't, that running style isn't as favorable outcome at Oakland. So we're going to have to figure out a way to be closer to the pace. You know that she's a ride horse, or I wouldn't have started her first out at 7/8.
You and Shug.
See, but, you know, I think...
That's Sam Houston.
I think two turns is what we want with her, and now we just got to get a good trip. It's 12 horses, and they all got the same ideas. You know, if you can get through the paddock at the Arkansas Bridge, you got a good shot.
Ron, this is interesting because you had this filly here in December. You sent her to Houston, and you, knowing that she's an Arkansas bred and knowing that you could run for this kind of a purse, explain the thought process and how that, you know, what you're doing there.
So she wasn't going to be ready to run early, and I wanted her to be down there where she wouldn't miss any training. We always had
to
worry about training.
There you go.
So I decided I'd go down there, get her gate card, run her first out. If she wins it, great. If she runs second or third, even better. But we'll give her a first out and load her back up and bring her home when she's ready to run. And, you know, I think that it's a lot easier to get horses that run a route of ground better fit down there than it is here and having to sidestep the 20-degree days that we get sometimes. I watched Mr. Asmussen do that with Tenfold, go down there and get them fit and bring them back up here. You know, if they're route horses, there's no sense in having them here working 3/4 of a mile before. I'm not one of these people that thinks you got to give them 20 breezes before they run. I'd rather run them.
Yeah, and that's old school. But that's you. We're going to start calling you OG. OG Mocha.
Win percentage sets way behind in importance things.
Exactly.
I'm trying to make these horses last.
Exactly right. Oh,
I was going to ask you a question. You brought up the Arkansas bred. You know, it's quite a unique program here. Obviously, we only race, first to be 3 months now, or at least racing, you know, about 5 months now. And with the big kaboom in the purses, and there's will continue to go up here. How's that helped the breed? Have you seen it, like, you know, start to inch up a little bit? You know, how many foals are there? couple hundred?
I think there was 400.
Was there 400?
Yeah. You know, but what I'm starting to see now is we got that that rotating where you can go outside of the state to get a sire 1 year and then have to breed back. Yeah. But, like, right now I have a practical joke, Arkansas bred. I've got a Not This Time Arkansas bred, Lord Nelson Arkansas bred, and I'm not the only one doing that.
Wow.
When the money gets as good as
84,000 for this purse,
it justifies you to go there. And also remember that Arkansas breds can win in Iowa or wherever, and they get money for the breeders.
Right, and they That's should. Right. So they do here, which is what we did in California. There's not a reduced purse for the state breds, which I don't think there should be.
No.
Especially here in the short meet. They're still running for $100,000 allowance races.
And people are wagering on them.
Oh, gosh, yes. The full fields.
It blew me away the other day whenever I saw we had an 11-horse field of Arkansas breds, and it was in, like, the second race. And they had, like, $900,000 wagered on that race. And then the feature had some really, really nice horses in it, and there was like $900,000 bet on it. I'm thinking, they don't take off. They like the field size, and they're starting to recognize enough of the names to where they feel confident in betting them.
Well, I think that's right. And the form is, this is my third year here. Before, I mean, you just almost closed your eyes, it seemed like, and you didn't know. The form's getting a little bit better. You start to zero in on some of the guys that are pointing for the meet and running their horses specifically for here. But the Arkansas bred racing has improved, and it's just going to get better.
Well, John Ed Anthony's into it. He can breed a horse. I don't care where he breeds it. John Ed Anthony's one of the best that's ever done it. I think he might be the
leading
owner here of all time.
Well, that would make sense.
I think I read he won his first race here 50 years ago.
That's pretty impressive.
Right?
Yeah.
And now he's out of the apprenticeship program.
He's leading now. Well, you know what? I this is crazy. Now you mention it. I took a headline. I was going to show this to you, and I got to find this photo. And here it is. I saw the photo. Moquette saddles 900th winner at Oaklawn. I'm going, oh my God, he won 900 races at Oaklawn? I'm thinking, that's got to be some kind of record. And then you go, that's total.
Yeah.
No, Danny, but the way the headline reads is
Danny Pites, he's an Arkansas guy.
Says, oh my God.
Great trainer, good person, but even funnier. He takes a picture of that and sends it to me and says, wow, you're in front of Bob Holtus. And I'm like, no, that's total. That's not at Oaklawn. And so I sent him back the deal where I said, punctuation saves lives, where it says, let's eat grandma, or let's eat, comma, grandma.
Yeah.
So the punctuation was a little...
Jay
they didn't count the match races.
Jay had that very funny sign from Santa Anita, and he posted a couple of weeks ago where he said, everybody needs an editor. you got punctuation counts.
Oh, yeah, classic. Danny has given me a hard time about that. I didn't write it. You know,
he might have slipped him a little bit under the table, but
yeah, if I'd have done it, I'd have made him use the right punctuation for sure.
I got to ask you about the horse that I've got my theory. Big days, big owners. Watch for people that and believe me, trainers know that
you want to win on big days.
Big days, and let their owner walk down and get that photograph. Well, you train for a guy, Lewis A. Sella. Talk about the Shadwell. That this was a Shadwell horse, right?
Yes.
That he bought in the redistribution. Chad actually started Lumatanati.
Yeah. So that's a horse that was coming off of a long layoff.
Right. We talked about this horse back in December.
So, Lou's very much hands off. You do whatever you want to do. Just make sure that we run well when they run. And the horse was working like $1 million the first time we ran him. And he got mangled out of the gates, and the jockey just took care of him. So, boss wasn't. He didn't beat me up about it. He was just like, it looks like they got to us on the purchase, But he said, make sure when you run him back, make sure that he's spotted well. And he said, if I wanted to lower him in a price, then I could, or if you want to try him again for a route. But he's got some ability. He's got to get better luck than he had his last race.
Isn't it nice to have owners that say, you're in charge.
You know, it's funny that those guys are always the ones with the highest win percentage.
But
whenever you sit back and you think, just do what you believe is what's best for our horse.
Right.
That wins races. That
sure
makes
does.
Money. And whenever you start pressing in any kind of gambling or sports, that's whenever you're making mistakes.
Yep.
And he's very much interested in running well on big days. And luckily, we've been able to do that, although maybe not enough, because he still gives me a hard time.
What about his other horse on Friday, Prodigious Bay, in the eighth?
I love that horse.
Well, that horse just ran a career best, and you got nipped. You got beat a length and change by a Ledge and Candy Tycoon. That was in the slop, so you know what? Broke his maiden in the slop. This horse doesn't mind it wet.
No, he's, you know, and he's a Maryland bred.
Yeah, lightly raced, 11 starts.
He's been a challenge. The horse has got ability, but he's been a challenge. The day that we won it at Maryland, I thought we'd gotten to the bottom of him and figured him out. We waited and gave him time and shipped him back to Maryland, and he just ran an absolute stinker, and I can't tell you why. His blood was great. His energy level was good. We thought he was going to run well, but he just laid an egg that day, and so we just backed up. Give him some time and brought him back here. And now we're positioned to where we ought to be pretty competitive. We got a hot jock on there that David Cabrera kid can actually ride a little bit, huh?
I mean, if it was a billboard chart, he'd have a bullet, but I tell you, he's zoomed. I just printed the he's zoomed into second place. I mean, not that he was far back. He won the first four, he won three one day. He won the first four, was it yesterday?
Right. The other day,
before?
Yeah.
And, you know, you can just tell when things are going good. And
well, that was the day. I think Jose Santos Jr. won, 17 races around the country or something. It was unbelievable.
So I've known Jose since he was 14, right? I met him at Delaware with his dad. His dad had Fernando Jara. And I remember Jose as a 14-year-old coming up going, hey, what about this horse that ran third the other day? Do you think that maybe you could get Fernando on it next time? And I thought to myself, you know, you're going to be an agent someday. You're going to be. And he's a worker, and he's sharp. He can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
He can tell you who's going to be the favorite and the non-winners of two at Turfway, and who's going to be the second choice and the non-winners of three at Houston. I mean, he doesn't do that on accident. He's studying and. So I, as a handicapper, I always pay attention to his horses that he's in charge of, because even the long shots are more alive than you might think.
Yeah, see, that's a good point. You do that. The sharp
Ron Anderson the same way.
The if sharp agents look at the horses and then say, hey, this is where you should be, to the trainers, and we're going to try and get him on. I ran into him. He was here the other day. We're trying to get Jose on Friday and just kind of, you know, tell us how you do it.
Yeah, and, no, he works.
Yeah, he does work.
I mean, I see him working.
You know what's interesting about this, because this is an outgrowth, and I'm sure he'll delineate this, but this is partly an outgrowth of what's gone on in the racing offices, drawing races via Zoom when they couldn't assemble in the racing office physically during COVID, as we adjusted in 2020 to it, and.
Yeah, you could not have done this years ago.
Exactly.
No, this
ago.
Was a benefit of COVID for him.
Well, but one thing that's, and maybe there are some people that would belie this comment. I don't sense that anybody is resentful that he's done this.
I don't think so. I think that a lot of what we call old heads, you know, the older guys probably wish that they would have been in on the evolution of how it's going to work quicker, because it kind of like it sucker punched them a little bit.
Hmm.
But it is what it is. You're going to be available through Zoom now. And it might have been brought on by you know, a pandemic, but he was able to get in front of it and
that's what he did
and profit off of it.
And so he has what, six riders? So let's make it straight. They're not all at one track, because
you
can't, you know, there's a limit how many you could have at each track.
I didn't think you. I whenever I first come around, I thought you had to be at the draw to represent a rider.
At the time,
I don't think there's a, quote, rule, but I think that's what was asked of you. Yes,
but the leading rider here was Ricardo Santana, and I've seen his, for 5 years, I maybe have seen him five times at Oakland.
Ruben.
Yeah.
Yeah, his agent.
And I may have seen him at Oakland five times. So it's not like that other people are not doing it satellite. He's just, I think, doing it with a lot more focus on it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and with the expanded options, too. What, two jocks and an apprentice in some spots?
Yeah. Yeah.
Depending on, how the association or the stewards want to come down on it. That's the limit.
That's the deal. In our sport, we're very guilty of being hesitant to change and thinking that the old way is always the best way. And in some cases, tradition is paramount. You save tradition. But if you don't evolve in our sport, you go out of business.
No question about it. And like you said, he jumped in at COVID when everything went electronic. And let's face it, so I think it's one of the things that we did do during the pandemic, when you couldn't go to the racetrack, we stepped up. We made it available on phone. We made it easy. And I think people grew up. Some of the old timers, I want to say old timer, I'm an old timer now, that refused to step into that world. Well, they had to. And now it's commonplace. So I think that, you know, the platforms that we have, the Oakland Anywheres of the world, we talked about the other day, we had 25, 30,000 people here, and someone made some comment about, oh, the on-track handle. On-track handle? Are you kidding me? Yeah. We got 30,000 people there. I guarantee you, half the people that were betting were sitting in their seat, punching it out on the phone. And the other half are here having a great time at the track, and hopefully they'll be coming back here for 30 years.
I addressed a comment, which I respect anybody that follows the sport, but I always think that, you know, there's certain people out there that just look for the negative out of anything. You got a positive post about 30,000 people being at the track, and someone goes, well, you can look at this two ways. Let's look at it the negative way. Well, the negative way is saying that the people aren't betting as much because for 30,000 people, there ought to be more on-track handle. But it's very reckless to say that. Whenever you look and you see, you can tell, we can't tell where they're betting from. Well, now with the on our cell phones, we can't tell. And yet that's what you're going to use. Everything looks good over there. Look at the fans having a great time, beautiful day, large fields. Everything's good and racing over there. Oh, but wait. Let's look at this side of it. You can look at it. So it's like to drag a piece of negative. The only thing that you might could see, which in this case happens to be off, into the light is exactly the reason why our perception of our sport is so screwed up right now. The people that have the microphones, the people that have the power, I'm not 100% sure where their interest lies. And that is a big statement to make, but I just like that one. Why, if you're going to say that statement, what comes out of that? What positive, what benefit does that come? 30,000 people in the stands cheering on a great day of racing, building new fans. The ages of those people were families with kids, got to see good races, great handle all through. But let's look for one little dark cloud. Yeah. Maybe this is what I can bring up.
And you know what? I got to hear some, when that went on, I think it was on Twitter, most of the reaction, most people got it. They get it. Like you said, the crowd's here. We started a thing here at Oakland called Oakland Anywhere. It's for Oakland. It's for Arkansas residents, and we encourage it. In fact, I the sign was up yesterday about it. It says Oakland Anywhere. Don't want to get up to bet the horses? Use Oakland Anywhere. So the track geolocates. We get credit for an on-track bet as far as the take goes. So why not sit here and get up. Nobody, very, very rare do you see people get up and go to the windows. They would have bet three or four tracks. They're punching it out on here. It doesn't show as an on-track bet on the stats, but we get credit for it here. The horsemen do, and the tracks do. It's not an out-of-state bet.
Well, so, one of the guys that I grew up with is a big handicapper, and he bets. He was really firing the other day. It was a beautiful card at Fairgrounds, an unbelievable betting card at Fairgrounds. He fires all that stuff, and he's doing it right at my box on his computer. Never once walked to the window.
Right.
Now, there's no way for that to show up, and he's with Twin Spires. That's his. He feels more comfortable with that ADW.
And he's probably, if he's got a big handle, he's getting a rebate.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, you know, but he's gambling on that. Now he's here. He's buying. An adult beverage, popcorn, maybe a corned beef sandwich. He's enjoying the races, and he's betting. I don't care how he does it. Come enjoy our sport. Watch these beautiful animals run, and have a good time. Just get it in. Send it in however you're going to do it. I don't care if it's on track, off track. And I know we do have to, as horsemen, we would prefer you to bet at the window because we get a bigger cut of it.
No,
unless you use our app.
Let's use the Oakland Anywhere app.
He's from Kentucky, so he doesn't have access
Correct.
To that app. So I don't care. I was happy that he was here enjoying the day and betting on horses doing what they want to do.
Right. And this is one reason I think people like to come to Oakland. I'm talking about the fans. It's a party here. I'm telling you what.
It is.
At the fifth race on a Saturday, I mean, the people just sitting around talking, waiting in line, like you said. There's lines for beers, for hot dogs, for the windows, for everything. It's just a fun place to be. So, by the way, there's tracks that would kill for
this.
The
other thing that I get a lot whenever they do this statement right here, there's nothing else to do in Arkansas. That's why we have good crowds. There's nothing else to do. Like, California, the reason people don't go to the race is because there's so much to do. I guess they just started hiking in the late 80s and 90s whenever the attendance started going down. They didn't hike before that, or the beaches were closed then, right? No. These people like horse racing. Stop the dumb stuff and saying, well, there's nothing else to do. There's people at Arkansas live and breathe to hunt. They go fishing.
Well, the lakes. Go through the parking lot. Forget the Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma. They drive Tennessee.
There's six states around
Arkansas, and so they come here for racing.
The reason they're here, this is the place to be. The same reason you go to Kentucky to Keeneland, the same reason we go to Saratoga.
Right.
It's the energy, and it is fun to watch racing there. You know, whenever I look through any place, I'm in the business, I love the sport. If I go to a place and I'm running in a big race or whatever, and I look through the grandstand and it doesn't have that energy, that crowd, it's not as fun.
No.
And whenever we've taken it, I think simulcast had something to do with it. I don't know what it was, but for whatever reason, there are certain places that keep it, that keep that energy. And they come here for the energy. The people come here to be seen, to see who they're going to see. You know, you never know. There's a, you know, basketball coaches, football coaches from other places. There's a couple country music people were here last Saturday, and it's
they fit right in, right?
Yeah, they blend in. Yeah. They're standing there in the beer line with you.
Absolutely.
So that's what it's good about.
And think about the riders turning for home when they hear the crowd, and then you get your picture taken in the winner's circle, and it's not. There's a guy over there. I think it's crowded. It's packed. People are You get pumped up.
There's an agent that buys a lot of horses for people, and he says, I got to come there. I haven't been there since 78. And I basically said, well, it hasn't changed. I mean, they got a big casino and a big deal, but it hasn't changed. There's still people. You're probably going to run into the same people, but there's still people show up on SAE Day. There's a Founders Day for the fraternity up at Arkansas.
I'm in SAE.
They'll be there. On Founders Day, which is March 17th, 18th, 19th.
Something else going on that day.
Yeah, well, that's the Whitmore Day.
No,
it's
not.
March 19th.
That's Marty, you said 17th.
So
the world's shortest parade here.
But they come here because that's the place to be. And if it didn't have the energy, they'd go somewhere else. They'd go hiking or go to the beach.
Speaking of Whitmore Day,
yeah.
like they did the sign painting at Churchill. They had to repaint the sign over there by the gift shop with the stakes, cross out the old hot springs, and write in Whitmore, which is kind of cool, right?
Oh, man.
How many times did he win that race?
Four
in a row, I think.
Yeah.
And so got the honor of being, you know, renamed. Now, talk about, I tell you what, you talk about renaming races. I'm pretty much probably the king.
I'm the king
of that. And they don't do too much changing here at all. These names have been, you got the 87th running of the Rebel, whatever it may be. So, I mean, that's quite an honor to cross out a name and add a new one. But, I mean, if there's ever going to be a horse in Oakland's history that's going to happen for, definitely was Whitmore.
Well, one thing about Hot Springs is they embrace horses that run here. You know, they've got a statue of American Pharoah, and we claim Smarty Jones.
Big time.
You know, we claim when you're here, you belong to them. And if you go somewhere else and do something good, then you're a local boy done well. And it doesn't matter if you ran one race here. You're Oakland's horse. And
who's the statue about here?
American Pharoah. And side note on that, I was second in that race. So I keep asking when are they going to put me about 8.5 back behind there. They have to put me on Central.
The world's longest statue.
Well, they could put you in Stubby's parking lot. That was about the distance.
It was just a half mile up the road. But anyways, the thought of them naming a race after a horse that I trained is very, very touching for me. I hope that everybody is okay with it. I want to keep tradition. I was glad they didn't trade the Count Fleet name. You know,
I wanted that.
But I do know this.
Do you get a barn? There's a Whitmore barn,
yeah,
too, right?
Which it
one
was
of the new barns.
It was the Count Fleet
that
barn.
That was the Count Fleet barn.
And now it's the Whitmore barn. But you know, that's Arkansas's horse, and I was lucky enough for him to make me look good. Between him, Greta, my wife, Jose, and all the grooms and therapy people, they all made both of us look very well, and we're very proud to get that honor, and more proud that whenever I go to the hardware store, somebody goes, you know, hey, you know, when's Whitmore Day, you know, and they don't know my name at all. They know
you're that guy.
You're that idiot that was lucky enough to have Whitmore.
You know, one thing you could talk about too on this, you know, separate from this honor and the lasting tribute that having a race named brings with it. No matter what goes on from here, Ron, you trained a champion, and that's one of those things that horsemen really can treasure. That, you know, no matter what horses get off the van going forward forever, you trained a champion, and of course the Breeders' Cup win, you know, obviously a big part of that. But you know, being able to say you trained a champion when horsemen don't generally, you know, they do retire, but not entirely. But that part has to be, you know, something that you'll just treasure. I mean, and maybe when things aren't going so good, you remind yourself, you know, I trained a champion, and I'll train another.
Well, whenever I won my first race, it was with an Appaloosa named Sparkling Bull at Blue Ribbon Downs. The purse was $1,000. And afterwards, they sent the media to our barn, and they did a profile on us for the program the next week. And it was they asked us what was our goals in the industry and all this. And I said then I wanted to make the best of the opportunities that I get. I never said I wanted to win the Kentucky Derby or being leading trainer. I just want to make the best of the opportunities that I get. And I think that with Whitmore and a few others, we've done good with that. Does that mean that this is the only one? You know, I hope we get other opportunities, and I hope they turn out to be a couple of them be a champion. That would be awesome. But wherever we go from here, it's because of the leg up that Whitmore give us, and I'm very aware of that fact that wherever we go in this industry, it's on the back of a horse. So if you don't appreciate the ones that took you to the next one, then you're probably not going to go as far as you could have.
Well, that's a you know, a rational and you know, reasonable and appropriate way to, you know, the way to think about the career and you know, on that topic, Ron, since we're you know, having an extended visit, you know, I missed last week, and we've had certainly plenty of news industry wise, and the situation, and you and I and Hammer and Danny Caldwell are going to do this at HBPA too, as it happens. But talk to listeners about and stakeholders about the horseman's view of dealing with the landscape we have right now in terms of, the testing, the administration of, regulators and how you deal with it, the frustrations that you face, and what you think the appropriate path forward, you know, might be, and how should horse players and fans be viewing what has been transpiring. And you can use the Derby situation, well, you know, as an example, or whatever other areas that you want to touch on.
The number one problem that I see as a shareholder and someone that is affected by the decisions that go on in our industry is perception. It's perception. There's no one out there with pom-poms saying when we do good. There's no one, there's not a marketing other than Steve Bick and a few other writers. There's no one out there telling the whole story. There's a couple of them pointing to the obvious things that we need to improve on, and that is dominating all conversations. And the perception, when I say perception is such a big deal, is whenever you think about the fact of how we've come in 10 years with medication and reform and with the focus on making it safer for these animals to run, and yet no one's talking about it. They're talking about Medina Spirit. I don't care, good, bad, ugly, whatever happens. There's rules that are supposed to be followed. If we are dealing with antiquated rules and high performance testing, then that needs to be set around and figured out. Let's work on it. Let's don't make all these people out to be villains. And I'll tell you this, the scariest thing when you talk about perception is Medina Spirit ran that Kentucky Derby and got a bad test for having the least amount of medication a horse has ever had. That won the Kentucky Derby for Mr. Baffert because it was legal to have Banamine and Butte and go further back. You could have had steroids. You could have had, obviously, Lasix. You could have had, I mean, so that was the cleanest. And yet you would have thought.
Nobody's put it in that term. That's actually an interesting
term. You would have
thought,
by the way, who's talking it. I mean, presidents pay people to spin stories. And it's almost like the powers that be keep spinning the story that this is corrupt, this is horrible, this is, and in fact, all the moves that we're making are to try to make it more transparent and put the focus where it ought to be. But if we don't get somebody up there telling the rest of the story, like I just said right there, that's the cleanest horse Mr. Baffert ever won the Derby with. Now, they were all legal, and if this horse had this positive, and I don't know, I'm speaking of it from, I don't even look at it. If he had this, then I'm sure then they'll deal with it. I would like there to be a quicker way of doing it. I think everybody's on that. I still don't understand why we can't figure out a way to do a big test before we run.
Brad Cox said that yesterday. Brad brought that same point up.
On the gamblers at the same time. You know, we got to take care of our gamblers. The fact that the Mandaloon's going to get awarded the race and the owners will get awarded the money. But what about the people that had the pick fours and the people that had that day would have made their, that would have been what they were telling their grandkids about the day I hit the superfecta with Mandaloon on top. And they don't have that. They were robbed. And that's the, why is no one thinking about that? Can we not figure out a way to do something? I mean, we've got...
Well, that's what a pretest would do.
Yes.
They would
yes.
take care of the gamblers because they're...
Well, there is out-of-competition testing going
yes.
on. I mean, it's not as if that aspect hasn't been... But as Brad said yesterday, and you can tell that Brad, this is not how he wants to win a derby, and it's not the way Garrett O'Rourke wants to win a derby, and you know, the team at Judmont, you know, everybody's acknowledging it, but this is not what they wanted.
No. Brad deserves the pictures and the accolades and yeah. the feeling that comes with it, being a Louisville guy, winning that race and getting the all that comes with it.
Yeah.
And I think that in some ways we need to think about preventive traces of betamethasone showing up, you know, in test, instead of we're going to catch you if you do it. And you know, I don't believe that the amount of that what that was in there had any effect at all on the race. But the rule is the rule.
Yeah.
If it's not supposed to be there and it's there, then you have to deal with it. That's why I say the testing needs to be antiquated, or is still antiquated, needs to be brought up to speed with how high level we are right now at testing.
And you talk about reporting it, okay? We have Class A, B, C. This was a Class C, if I'm not mistaken, right? So... A is not good. A is bad. C's not so bad. But to the guy sitting on the couch at home, whenever there's an overage, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's our fault, because we're not. We don't have a way of differentiating, which we need.
Listen, I mean, not to be exasperated, but I mean, for 15 years, you know, I had over a decade of the RMTC conversations trying to explain the difference between overages of therapeutic medication versus attempts to influence performance with PEDs. Even we're at the point, frankly, where even those that actually know that the difference between therapeutic med overages and an attempt to cheat and an attempt to influence performance, even people that know this aren't helping or aren't trying to, you know, to explain that to the public.
And here's the strangest thing that I have a trouble with right here. The same test that is going to cause someone to lose the Kentucky Derby, the biggest race of our career every year. The same test can't test what Navarro and them were using.
Right. Well, it's a different...
But what I'm saying is, how legitimate does this make you feel? Is that maximum security ran right through it. And yet they could pick up a trillionth of a gram of betamethasone.
Picogram.
We know for a fact that they need to do something different. The thing is first protect the horse, second protect the owner. If you go into it and say, this is our goal, this is how it's got to happen, we got to work together, protect the horse, protect the gambler, protect the gambler, protect the gambler. After that, you know,
of course. That's driving the business.
I really wish that, you know, when we do these EquestriCons or we do these, I want there to be a form of not the same old people asking about how their great grandkids are doing. I want there to be people who's not afraid to stir it up. I mean, I get trouble all the time for the things I say. I say things that are counterculture sometimes to our industry, but I'm not the norm of the industry. I'm not a third generation. I'm not kin to anyone. You know, I'm an outcast. I'm okay with that. I wear that badge. But at the same time, a disruption every now and then to get people to look at it a fresh way is not a bad thing.
No, that's true. Use Whitmore as an example. And of course, it was the year before, but you've had other starts in Breeders' Cups. Explain the process that you know that you in the barn and you and the you know, the racetrack, you know, your practitioner in terms of veterinary support. Talk about what kind of a system and what kind of controls that you're using to make sure that if any, you know, a horse like Whitmore, a 7-year-old, has got arthritic joints and, you know, gets care and gets treatment and, you know, gets things that make it easier on him as a equine athlete. Explain, Ron, how you make sure that, the timing is right, the execution is right. Explain that to people.
I am not as concerned about any of that stuff on timing and all that, because we're more therapy driven, we're more saltwater therapy, we're more MagnaWave, we're more of that stuff. But I'm more concerned about, did the person that I've never met that delivered my hay, did he spill coffee on it? Because I can control that other stuff. I'm 100% okay. If the vet accidentally does something, or I'm sorry, I was treating a horse next to you, and that's happened in this industry.
Absolutely.
If
compound laboratory.
If something like that, that's me. That's my fault. And I'll stand up and go, hey, I should have done a better job watching my animal to make sure nothing was introduced to him. But the fact is that with the high level of testing we have, we're picking up contamination. And contamination, the way it reads right now, you're in the report as being a cheater. And I promise you that the majority of these people with the contaminations aren't cheating. They did everything the right way, but they're being treated as though they walked right into the stall right before they hung the bridle and give this horse something illegal. I've ran people out of Jack Van Berg's stall. We're across the way from each other. A guy just started working there, just got hired. We're needing help at every racetrack, right?
Yeah.
He just got hired. He went into the stall and used the restroom, and one of their horses' stalls that was in that day took a leak in the barn. And I ran over there, and Jack was up in his truck, and I said, Jack, you got to go do. That's how easily this guy takes a medication for blood pressure. This guy went out last night and did something he shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
And
well, no one, everyone's making everyone when it comes to the one that happened here, in fact, that, you know, the peeing in the stall story. That's one that people just are, that they seem to scoff at.
Yeah, they don't believe it. And the thing is that you know, I've actually been at Delaware Park and had a truck driver bring in a load of alfalfa. It was so expensive there. A bunch of us went together and got a load of alfalfa from the Washington State. And when he got there to deliver it, he was starting to throw it off. When he did, he had a monster drink that fell on about 3 bales. And I'm like, well, we're not taking these bales. Because, you know, if your horse ingests this, it's caffeine. I don't want it. You load that up and take it back to those people. But what if I'm not there?
Wow.
What if, I mean, and that's the deal, is like I'm labeled a cheater automatically. Now, I want the testing to catch cheaters for me, for the animal, for the industry. But at what point are we going to understand that a picogram of this isn't going to affect a 1,200-pound animal? When I think regulations are used in place of common sense, I think we're getting far away from where we're needing to go. You cannot replace common sense with a regulation. And we're doing that more and more. We're telling horsemen, 60-year in the business, you have to work your horse, you know, twice in the last 30 days. You're telling them how to train. You're replacing you're putting a regulation there, and you got a guy, you know, you're a guy up there going, well, wait, I like my horse to break sharp out of the gates. I'm not going to work him. He's got his gate card. The official says he's okay. Why do I have to do it? Well, that's the regulation. Well, but That's
well. Well, that's because
that's
we've
more for the gambler.
It's also racetrack management, racetrack organizations that are now fearful of outside influence and animal rights terrorist activity. That it basically construes any. Any unfortunate circumstance.
That's all they are is a PR firm.
Well,
that's all they are.
And a money raising and a,
Well, that's it. That's what they do. That's why I said, we're slacking on that.
It's a very, I heard a story, in fact, in the past week about a horse that had been off 18 months and the horseman in question doesn't have a lot of horses. He's got maybe four horses at any one time. This is a horse that he's carefully brought back and has been patient with, done everything right, went through all of the systemic requirements to get the horse entered, including two workouts and state vet exams, etc., and did every single thing that was asked. And then was refused entry anyway. We don't want that horse here.
It's like when you go on the bank and they say it's their policy. I love it. Like, that's my policy. I got to charge you $5 to cash a check. It's your own check. It's off your bank, but it's our policy. It's a get out of jail free card. You can do whatever you want to and say it's policy. What I want is I want there to be common sense. I want there to be regulations protecting the horses. But after that, let's let people train the way they want. I've got several horses that I kick out for here. So we're having to get, just so people understand, you got to get a 180-day vet report. What that means, the horse has been off 180 days, you got to have the vet watch it work. And now, if it had an issue...
That's reasonable.
No, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, nobody would question that.
What I'm saying is it's got five workouts since January, or since December. It says you got to have two within 30 days. One's on the 31st day. One's 11 days away. They go, you can't run. Well, what do you mean? Well, you're 1 day. You're 1 day off. That's just our policy. 1 day. Well, anybody with common sense, I was always taught a rule is in place when common sense isn't used. So, why would you say, okay, no, you're not going to be allowed to run this horse. Instead, I'd like you to go out there and work it again because it's of 1 day? I mean, come on. At what point are we just being,
There's two sides. I'm going to take
racing
the other side. What if the rule was 31 and then you were 32 days? I mean, at some point, it's like the speed limit 65. Well, yeah. I only went 66. Well, okay, the speed limit 7. I only went 71. So the rules are there to show fitness in the horse, obviously. But what's happened here is, which I hope will evolve, we have a three-day week, okay? You're racing for a race on Sunday, okay? Doesn't go. Well, it doesn't come back on Monday. It comes back 5 days later. So I think it will eventually evolve, you did the right thing.
What about if the horse was in and they call the races off because the weather, you missed 5 days of training, and then, by the way, that race ain't coming back for another 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And,
so,
at some point there has to be going common sense.
So now that's where common sense comes in. I get it. But there has to be a number, all things going normal, that here's the rule. And like I said, we do it, back in the day,